Okay. Yeah. So let's see what you got first.
Okay. Sure. This design, it looks very familiar to what we have. The idea of having regions and you have roots.
Yeah.
Right. That seems fairly straightforward.
Mm.
What else?
They have new types that they define.
Yeah. The stairs become interesting when you're talking about the pointers.
Yeah.
They discussed a couple of scenarios, well, more than a couple, but they ended up proposing only two. To solve the case in which you have pointers inside one region and pointers across regions. The one inside regions, what they store is an offset. It's not really an offset. It's the difference between the address to the pointer and where the pointer is pointing to.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, they embed into the value the offset of the region and then the offset within the region to the actual object that you're pointing to. And to do this, they have this, there's a name for that in C. I think it's called storage or something like that. You know, the keyword static, you say static in that static has a name. Int is a type, I is the name of a variable.
Modifier,
yeah. So they propose all these modifiers. I think the X is for across regions. And the I is inside the same region. But they also have just persistent with no other letter. I'm not clear about what that means. To do this...
Maybe that means both? Could be either or?
Right. And there's a difference between having persistent int pointer and int pointer persistent. So, for instance... This one means that the pointer p2
is
points.
Oh.
Points to a persistent.
Okay.
Integer. If you do int after persistent, the pointer itself is volatile, but it points to persistent memory. I think that's what I understood. It's towards the end of the document where they made a distinction.
So in this case, this is actually, the pointer itself is persistent, in this case.
Yes, the pointer itself is persistent. They talk about pointer functions, and they discussed a couple of options. They say that, I remember, it was something about either storing the offset, or modifying the table, I don't remember the details. This is completely new, at least for me. The commits.
So in there, yeah, they specify explicitly which portions of code deal with persistent data. So if you modify any persistent data, you put it in one of these blocks. You don't do it outside these blocks, I think.
But the only thing, well, what these attempt to guarantee is consistency, right?
Atomicity of these blocks.
Right. And then they talk about whether when you have nested blocks and who starts first and who starts later, then after. And they talk about some principle that whoever starts, like in this case, if this one starts, then none of this should be committed until this one finishes.
Yeah.
But then they say, in general, you don't know, it's difficult to track this dependency, so they added a parameter, an identifier, to say those who have the same identifier is the ones that we have to apply this technique. Those who don't, then they're
independent.
They
can run that. Yeah.
Yes.
I see.
This is ID bar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have two others, MVN log commit, one that is transactional, and the other one, I just remember the name, I think is in order, something like that. The differences are very subtle. But I think the transactional one enforces order, also ordering in memory updates.
I see.
I don't fully understand why we need all of them, but what I my understanding was that the other one enforces that no updates are performed, the updates are not visible to other threads until the transaction is finished and committed. Whereas this one, you have to, the updates are seen by other threads, but if something goes wrong, you have to roll back. They do talk about the two options, doing commit logs or undo logs.
Redo or undo.
Redo or undo.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading that they think the undo makes more sense.
I see.
What else is interesting here? Well, these are the APIs. One thing in particular that I noticed that there is no API to set one object as a root. And I found that somewhat useful when I was writing the implementation. For instance, suppose that here you have roots that you use to walk the content of the region.
Hmm.
But suppose you have a data circle that you don't want to modify the content, you just want to make this already know the root.
Hmm.
Without creating a new one, you just want to declare in a linked list, let's say that you want to make a root or the head of the list as opposed to the first one, the second one.
Hmm.
For whatever reason, there's no support for that. Although I don't know how useful that case is.
How do they specify root here?
There's an API here. See this one, root. So you specify the region which you want to do it, type, give you information about the size, and the root name. So this will allocate a new object of this type in this region, and you assign a name to it.
So why can't you this object be the second node of the linked list?
It could. It potentially could.
Mm.
But if you want to, what I'm saying is that you cannot change.
Existing
root, right?
An existing. So this, because this allocates memory?
Yes.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay.
Support for legacy. They talk about what is this here? It's the pointers, persistent pointers. Yes. Basically, because in a pointer, not all the bits are used because you don't have to access the 64
mm-hmm.
bits. Then you can use the higher bits to specify whether you're persistent or not. This is for support legacy.
Mm.
I think it's a new solution.
But I see. But the way they deal with pointers is by translating code, right?
Yes, I think that's what they want.
The compiler translates it.
Yes.
Because every time it sees a persistent pointer, it adds some offset to it.
It also depends on the modifier of the pointer, the type
mm-hmm.
of persistent pointer.
Yeah.
Because the translation changes whether it's across regions or within the same region.
I see. So if it is within the same region, then
you store the difference.
The pointer just contains the difference. The
yes.
previous
yes.
location and the previous value.
No. I think it's the difference between the memory address of the pointer and the value that it's pointing to.
Right. So the location of the pointer and what it is pointing to. The difference between the
yes.
value. The location and the value. The difference is what they...
Yes, that difference is stored there. Yes.
The difference is stored in the pointer itself?
Yes. In that memory address of the pointer, that becomes the value of the pointer.
So the value is not the target, but just the difference.
Yes.
And since it is just the difference, is the entire region contiguous in their solution?
It's contiguous in the process address space.
It is contiguous.
Yes.
Okay, so that's why... But you could move that entire contiguous space to a different location.
Correct, yes.
That's why having the difference actually makes sense.
Right. The limitation that pointer has is that you cannot address across regions.
You cannot address across regions. Okay.
Right. So...
So to address across regions, you need an additional identifier.
Correct.
Region
yes.
identifier. and the offset
within that region.
Within that region.
Right.
So it's no longer a difference.
It's no longer a difference. It's more like the same way you point to pages. Like you have a page, the frame number, and then offset.
Why don't they do that even, I mean, have a single
one,
solution,
right?
For the same?
I thought about that. The answer that I gave to myself was that maybe your use case is a lot simpler.
Yeah.
And this solution is enough for you. Because for the other ones, you have to carry with you some lookup tables.
Yeah.
Which you may not need for your specific use case.
I see.
I don't know if that's a good enough reason.
You need a lookup table. But you already have the value or the offset relative to the beginning of the...
The region may be mapping different offset.
Right.
For this process. So you have to know, you have to have a lookup table to know to map from AD to process address space for that specific region.
Oh, okay. I see. Whereas... No. But isn't that the same amount of... So I'm trying to think what the compiler can do.
They have a snippet called here. this is what they call the upholder.
Yeah.
This instruction is translated into this instruction.
Yeah.
So you store the difference.
You store the difference. But you might as well, and then when finally you have, when you're reading it, you do this.
Right.
You take, and you take the off holder. So you take the value and
you
add the address of the pointer to get the target.
But you're arguing that still you need to know which region is this, right?
Actually, you don't need to know the region.
You don't need to know the region.
That's true. I see. I see your point now. You don't need to know the region. That's correct. You don't need to know the region. As you don't have to look up a table to see which
right.
The offset for the region that pointer
right.
Resides in.
I didn't fully understand what they said about this, but I think they claim that this type of operation, this translation could be done very efficiently with a new processor that they have a huge insertion set, and you can do that very efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
Because they say, well, this may look expensive, but it's actually not, because it's different than that. They didn't quite understand that.
Because the main issue is computing the address of the... Actually, no. Even that is not the problem. Because when the compiler translates this code, right, it needs to know the address of the memory that contains the pointer, the value of the pointer. So you can translate it. So you're loading from a memory location. So if you, when you're dereferencing a pointer, what are you doing? You're loading from a memory location.
Right.
Right. Well, the contents of the memory location is using, you're using that to load again. Right. Let's say you're reading a point, a target location. Using that as an address to load again. Since you have the address already in your register doing that.
Right, because that's the instruction that you're...
Yeah, that's the preceding instruction.
Right.
The preceding instruction also already gets you that value.
Yeah.
That you're adding.
It's very simple. Quite clever.
As opposed to reading from a table, now that would be expensive.
Yes. And I think you need two lookups, if I understood correctly. In that table.
Yeah.
Okay, so the optional... ID value, right. The ID, they talk about this one, the ID
that's
value.
That's the, for other regions.
Other regions. Okay, so, yes. The ID value, what I understand here is that they basically partition the process address space. up to one region, from one region up, that's all reserved for persistent memory. I mean, it's the same for all processes. It's just that they have some math here that I couldn't understand.
Hmm.
Anyway, but what I understand is that if this is the process of the space,
yeah,
and this is zero and this is n, the maximum value.
Hmm.
Up to this point, all this is reserved for persistent memory.
In every process.
In every process.
Hmm.
And then this space is divided equally in things called segments, I believe.
Yeah.
And then all you need.
So it's one and one segment contains at most one region.
Right.
The starting address of the region is mapped to the starting address of the segment, and it can grow no larger than the segment.
Right. So I think they call this 2 to the L3. And this whole thing, this number here.
Yeah.
They have L2 also. I didn't quite understand, but they gave some examples that the numbers also confused me even more because they said that 2 to the 34 was 2 gigs. And I say, no, that's not 2 gigs.
That's 2 to the 34 is, that's 16 gigs.
Right. Because 30 is 30. I mean, 1 gig is 2 to the 30.
Yeah. I don't know what they mean by.
Maybe there's something wrong there, or I didn't understand at all. But
where do they say?
Well, here they are explaining the lookups that we talked about previously. Here is basically how.
For example,
the partition,
L1 equals 2 bits, right? L2
right,
equals
bits.
28 bits. No, something is wrong. L3 is 34. And what is L1 at? How in that figure can you do L1? The middle L2.
L2 is the middle, yeah. I think L2 is what you used to index which of these segments you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
And
each NVE segment contains L3 bits, 2 to the L3 bits.
Ish.
Oh, because they use bits here. 2 to the L3 bits. So if L3 is 34, then
that's not 2 gigs.
It is 2 gigs. If you 2 gigabytes, it's 16 gigabits.
Oh.
Because I don't know why they do bits there, but that's what they do. They change it, see? 2 to the L3 bits. So your math is not off. It's just that they're using different units.
I didn't fully understand these lookups.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of spending more time. So now you understand a little bit more, right? Because
yes.
So, but you see, I mean, what I wanted you to basically get from this reading is to start with their approach. And they are using is an entirely compiler-based approach. So whatever changes tracking of information is happening because of compiler generated code, not happening because of the kind of things that we did, which is do a static translation.
Right. They do address they do consider very briefly our approach, which is the orthogonal persistent approach. And they say that it requires too much runtime overhead.
Yeah. Which is true.
It is true.
Which is true. The flexibility that you get. So I was talking to, in my last discussion with Yu Feng and Cheng, we talked about multiple possibilities, which is to have a paper that considers both approaches. One is the approach that we are taking is reduces development complexity significantly so that developer doesn't have to do much, but it has more runtime overhead. The approach that they are taking, the developer has to be a lot more involved in specifying, you know, what is persistent and how to, you know, where changes to persistent memory are happening and putting them in blocks and things like that. And evaluating these two systems, you know, in a paper. The other possibility is to come up with a new solution that uses the best of both approaches. Is there some middle ground that you can create that does not have as much runtime overhead as our as SoftVM, but at the same time it does not require the developer to put in so much effort? So is there some middle ground? So that's really what we talked about as what you could potentially work on.
Okay.
Which is why I wanted you to understand their approach really well, so that you can compare and contrast and see what ideas we can borrow from either approach.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of subtleties to this approach, and
yeah,
the implications are not trivial.
If you have some questions, by the way, they said that they can help to answer.
Sure, I want to read this again more carefully,
yeah,
and write down questions.
Right. I think that would be good.
Well, after that, they talk about the other type of commit logs and how to do checkpoints and things like that. I think it's interesting. I wasn't expecting them to basically partition the present address space. I thought I always thought of that approach as, I think, even post much limitation.
I think this is somewhat of a middle ground, actually, between what we are doing and assuming that a region is always going to be in a fixed address. Here they are allowing a little bit of flexibility. They are saying that, well, process address space is broken up into two parts, persistent, and then even the persistent part is broken up into several segments. And all you need to do is, if you want to load a region, find one empty segment in that part of the address space. You don't need to put it in exactly one location. And they address the pointer issue very intelligently.
Sure. Sure. Still, there are some things like regions cannot grow more than 2 gigabytes. And
which I think is not a hard limit, as far as I'm concerned, because you can always set up your system. Let's say you can have different types of regions, and you can have regions within the same persistent memory space. You could have slots for smaller regions as well as large regions. You could do intelligent things there.
I see. I don't remember finding this paper any assumptions about the density of this new persistent memory. How big is it? Because I think that will impact drastically.
You mean the physical size?
Density, yeah. Physical size and how much storage capacity it has. Because if it's something in the order of magnitude of DRAM, then this design is more than enough. But if it's something that we know that's scaling a lot faster and it's approaching SSD or maybe hard disk density, then maybe the design.
But why do you say that? I mean, even if it, let's say it's a terabyte PCM, right? Or persistent memory. Why is that a problem? Because 2 to the 64 is much larger than a terabyte.
That's true, but you don't get to use a whole 64, right?
You don't? So maybe you get, I don't know what you get. What do you get? 2 to the...
It's like a 56 or something like that?
Yeah, even that is large.
Yeah,
so gigabyte, terabyte is 2 to the 40. petabyte is 2 to the 50.
So it's still a lot.
So it's more than, it's still a lot. And I think it's clever the way that, I thought it was very clever that they broke it up into two parts and said, okay, this is the persistent memory portion of the address space that volatile memory should not be using. And in that region, I'm going to just create segments. And you could potentially think of having multi-size segments for small regions and large regions so that you don't end up wasting address space if it is scarce. But I don't think it's going to be scarce. And by allowing the flexibility to move the regions around, they solve a very important problem.
True. It's true. I think it's great. I guess in the future you can think about what is the format that for your specific use case.
Sure, yeah.
You have many small regions and then, or maybe a distribution of region sizes for your specific use case.
Yeah, I mean, you can have different executable formats that manage this persistent memory portion of the address space differently. This, because it's all software, it's all changeable, it's all configurable. Actually, that's the word. It's configurable.
Right. Do you know how far along are they in making this happen?
I have no idea. You mean how far along are they? I mean, the way Chang talks about it, it seems like a lot of this is already implemented.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Because I figure this requires kind of support.
Not really.
Well, you have to enforce not using that high address space, right?
Well, you could potentially think of mapping all these segments ahead of time. I don't know how much, maybe there is, the kernel support will certainly help, right? But I don't know how much they're assuming. I'm not sure if they're assuming anything. Maybe they are. Actually, I just don't know.
But it does look like a very interesting phrase.
I can see this becoming real.
Well, they do have the resources to pull it off.
Yeah.
they do hardware and software. So, yeah. If someone can make this happen, it's definitely
them. Has to be them, yeah. That's true. It's either them or Microsoft.
Microsoft, they don't build chips, right?
No, they don't build chips, but they can build the software like this. They build compilers, they...
True, but don't you need some...
hardware support? Well, they can work with Intel on that.
Yeah.
It's in Intel's interest. If Microsoft is winning whatever contest, Intel is better off being a part of the winning team than to be...
Yeah, and what's going to be fighting there?
Yeah, fight.
So, still, we have no idea what I'm going to be doing in the summer, right?
I just told you. It's. I mean, not exactly, but approximately. You have a very good sense for it. We have a very good sense for what you might end up doing. But,
I see.
Which is to explore what we are doing and this approach and look for perhaps some sort of a middle ground which is very attractive. I think what they came up with, for instance, the, you know, how they manage the segments, I think it's a very attractive middle ground. That's the way I see it. But maybe there is more. In terms of design that we can simplify. I think here the major issue I see with this approach is development complexity. Because the developer needs to be aware of everything. How persistent memory is used, how data gets mapped to persistent memory, everything, right? So I think our experience and your experience with simplifying that can potentially be brought into this to see how the, you know, you can, you know, what kind of compiler support can we create to simplify
the development effort required for this sort of stuff.
I have no idea, but this seems very exciting.
For instance, one idea that I'll throw out is, can the compiler automatically determine the log commit blocks in the code? If it were to do that, then that's one developer effort that is reduced. That's one. Then second is, can the compiler automatically determine persistent variables versus non-persistent variables? That I think is harder. Even the first one is pretty hard, but maybe some of the ideas that we have in SoftPM can be used here to do that. But this is just my initial thoughts.
Right.
Okay. So why don't you continue to read this, and then next week we can talk again. As to the meeting with the Intel guys on the last week of April, I know you are going to be traveling at that time.
Yeah.
But if you can schedule your travel in such a way that you can at least call in, I think that would be good.
Okay. I'll see what I can do.
Would be good, because then you can ask them questions, and you'll also get to talk about your work and so on, so that they are somewhat prepared when you show up.
Okay.
So you know that I sent you the call-in information and the time as well, right?
Yes.
So if you can plan your travel around that, I think that would be good. You just need a payphone or something.
Even no, I can call from my phone, from my cell phone.
If you have cell coverage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have local numbers. If in that email, there is a link for all local numbers. So wherever you are, you should be able to find the local number to call it.
I was reading the... browsing out of the list of publications from UFM.
Yeah.
He has many publications.
Yeah.
And many of them are related to some form of language techniques or...
If they write this stuff out, it'll probably get published for sure. They might need your help maybe with wrapping up the project so that it becomes publishable. That's just my guess. maybe with the writing. Mm-hmm. But I think this can be a high-impact paper, whatever they have in this document.
Do you know this professor?
Zipeng Shen, yeah. He's at... he was at William and Mary, and now I think he moved to North Carolina State. Yeah, one of his students interviewed with us.
For becoming a faculty?
Mm-hmm. Zipeng Shen. Zipeng Shen. He's a faculty, right?
Yeah, he's a faculty.
William and Mary, see? Yeah, he is very good. This guy is very good. It's two HasPLOS 2014 papers.
That's good. I think I'm going to have an interesting summer.
Yeah, I think it's a very good opportunity for you. I'm glad we asked, because I think they're also very interested in working with you. they really like what we do, what we did with SoftVM. They're taking a different approach, but I think they see the value in our approach as well. There are certain things which are very nice about the design that we have. So if we can bring some of those ideas into this project, I think that would be the ideal outcome for your summer internship.
That's good.
Okay, so should we talk briefly about what you're doing with the with SoftVM for persistent memory?
Sure.
I think the next step should be more data collection. It's more structured data collection. And I was thinking that maybe you could start by running the data structure micro benchmarks, assuming that you have a version that's stable enough to run those benchmarks.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of bugs that I have to fix first.
Is it ThreadSafe, the library?
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about that.
But I think our goal should be to get to that state so that we can start creating some data and we can share it with the Intel guys. Because eventually, even for what, you know, this library, their initial goal is to use PMFS for the region storage. And if we create a library for SoftVM that uses PMFS, then at least we could talk about a paper that contrasts these two approaches.
Yes.
So in some sense, I see whatever, you know, you're doing with the PMFS work as aligning really well with your internship goals. And at least from my perspective, and this should be also, you know, what you should be thinking about is, at the end of the internship, you want to have a paper, right? It has to be productive. And if you don't have a paper, you don't have anything really to show for the internship. So that's what I would encourage you to, you know, think carefully about. You know, every time you have discussions with the people there, try to have that in mind. Where am I going with this paper that I need to produce at the end of the semester, right? What is this paper going to be about? And unless you know, these guys have full-time jobs, right? Paper writing may not be their topmost priority. But for you, I think that is the top priority, given your goals for after your PhD.
Right.
But if they see that you are really motivated in getting a paper out, then they might also feel encouraged to help you and so on. But the initiative needs to come from you. That's what I think.
Right. Well, it's encouraging to know that, right? I keep forgetting his name. Your friend, he has many publications, so.
Oh, yeah.
Most likely he'll be interested in that.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's a manager now. So, writing papers may not be the most important thing for him.
I figure it's not, yeah.
Yeah. So, but if he sees that someone is interested in writing up and submitting to a conference, then he'll probably be very supportive. Because he sees the value in it. But he might not have his own time to, a lot of own his own time to give it.
Okay. I'll get to it, and I have some bugs to fix first. Yeah.
So what they were recommending was to, you know, compare the SoftVM, and this was what I was thinking as well.
soft PM on top of PMFS using the same workloads that we used to evaluate the original soft PM. So it's starting in the data structures workload. So hopefully we can, you know, since you shared the same workloads with Chang, I'm assuming it'll be easy for you to find them and run them.
Yes, yes. Although I don't, yeah, I haven't looked at them in a while.
Yes. The other thing which I want you to think about is how can we borrow some of the ideas in that work into soft PM to reduce the runtime overhead. That's another way to think about this. Can we make containers contiguous in the process address space? What if we can? What if we can assume that the process address space is structured like what they're assuming? Can we make soft PM a lot? Because if we start exploring both directions, right, then you might converge at some point to a solution that is much more attractive than either of them.
True. Yeah. That is true. Okay.
All right. Good. So I need to get ready for class, but maybe we can meet again next Thursday and continue the discussion.
Okay, sounds good. Tomorrow the paper club will be the discussion.